The weather was accommodating, Kelly learned. Perhaps the world's most sophisticated weather prediction service operated to support air operations over Vietnam. Not that the pilots really appreciated or acknowledged it. The showers start tomorrow, the chief petty officer told them. All of the officers were there and evaluated this news soberly. Mr. Clark, Admiral Greer asked. Rain sounds good to me. The only way they can spot me on the inbound leg is the bubbles I leave on the surface of the river as I swim. Rain will break that up. It means I can move in daylight if I have to. We're ready to go, Maxwell answered. Then it's a go mission on my end, sir. Kelly could feel his skin go cold. Captain Albee, upon whom 25 Marines and perhaps 20 others relied upon for their lives, looked over at Kelly and smiled. Mr. Clark, sir, you be real careful. I think it's time for your swim. This mission is go. There was no exultation. In fact, every man around the chart table looked down at the maps. Then the eyes came up, and each pair read all the others. I guess we better get our helos warmed up. Kelly put aside his fear as best he could and started focusing his mind on 20 men. Maxwell saw his face change. My second son, Dutch suddenly told himself, as brave as Sonny and just as smart. But he'd never sent Sonny into danger personally, but it had to be this way, and Maxwell knew that Kelly trusted him. Kelly caught the look and grinned. Don't sweat it, sir. The sea sled was wheeled out to the flight deck by the men who had prepared it. The helicopter was up and running now as Kelly walked outside. He'd never had an audience like this before. Irvin was there, plus three other senior Marine NCOs, and Albee, and the Admirals, and the Ritter guy, all seeing him off like he was goddamn Miss America or something. Two Navy chiefs came up to him. Batteries are fully charged, the chief machinist said, running down the list of his equipment. Sounds good to me, Kelly shouted over the noise of the helicopter. Kick ass, Mr. Clark. See you in a few, and thanks. Kelly turned and looked at them all. First in, last out. A half smile and nod were sufficient gestures for the moment, and they took their courage from him as he climbed aboard the helicopter. The big Sikorsky rescue chopper lifted off a few feet. A crewman attached the sled to the bottom of the helo, and then it headed aft, flying off into the darkness without strobes and disappearing in a matter of seconds. Kelly checked his watch. It was 8:16 when he unclipped the sea sled, flipped the power switch, and brought it to life. He adjusted the flippers on the sled and headed off on a compass course of 308. There was now no turning back, Kelly told himself, but for him, there rarely was. Welcome back, Doris, Pastor Charles Meyer said as he entered Ray Brown's house. He took both her hands in his, smiling warmly. Our prayers are answered. For all his pleasant and supportive demeanor, this was an awkward meeting for all three participants. Father and daughter sat together on the old blue sofa, with Meyer to their left in an armchair. I'm surprised how good you look, Doris, he said.
Thank you, Pastor.
It's been hard, hasn't it? Her voice became brittle.
Yes.
Doris, we all make mistakes. God made us imperfect. We don't always succeed, but you did succeed. You're back now. The bad things are behind you, and with a little work, you can leave them behind you forever.
I will, she said with determination. I really will. I've done such awful things.
Meyer was a difficult man to shock, but what he heard now did shock him. Over the course of 20 minutes, he heard of things that even he had never dreamed of. There was a devil in creation, but the face of Lucifer was not for the unprotected eyes of men, certainly not for the eyes of a young girl whom an angry father had mistakenly driven away at a young and vulnerable age.
God visited you,
and saved you, Doris, Meyer said quietly when she had finished. You've come back, and you won't ever do things like that again. He had to be careful, he thought, and counsel Doris to speak with the police. As a citizen, as a man of God, he had to do something to help those other girls. Exactly what, he wasn't sure. He'd ask his son about that, a young sergeant with the Pittsburgh City Police Force. There. Kelly's head was above the water only enough to expose his eyes. To his north was darkness that his eyes began to penetrate. There was his hilltop, a mile away. There was a road only 100 yards away, and at the moment it was totally vacant. It was time. Kelly steered the sled close to the bank. He stripped off the wetsuit, stuffing it in the waterproof container on the now surfaced sled. He quickly donned his camouflage fatigues. Next, he did his camouflage makeup. Shouldering his gear, he flipped the power switch on the sled. It motored off toward the middle of the river, sinking to the bottom. Kelly climbed the bank and disappeared at once into the thick foliage, moving slowly up the hill. Halfway up, he got his first look at the prison camp. It was an open space amid forest. Kelly looked away, concentrating on the remainder of his climb, moving silently through the brush. At length, he reached the top. He sat down for a moment, making himself totally still, looking and listening, before finding himself an observation spot. Satisfied, he reached into his vest and pulled out one of his radios. Snake calling Cricket. Over. Snake, this is Cricket, reading you 5x5, one of the communicators replied, inside the command van parked on Ogden's deck. In place, beginning surveillance. Over. Copy that. Out. He looked up at Admiral Maxwell. Phase 2 of Boxwood Green was now complete. Phase 3 began at once. Kelly began examining the camp. There were guards in all 4 towers, 2 of them smoking. That had to mean their officer was asleep. There were no lights at all, and no sounds. It was like being at Quantico, he thought, the camp eerily similar to their training compound. With luck, the battle would be as successful as the drills, he thought. A few minutes after 4, the fresh guards took their places, relieving their bored comrades. Good, Kelly told himself. Stay bored. His first substantive radio message was a single code group which he tapped out using Morse code.